This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, read I Can Tolerate Anything But the Outgroup.
I installed a new mailbox. I'm very excited about that. I got new Levi's coming today. Everything's
coming
up. Wait,
what? You switch your mail app?
No. The physical mail slot on my garage. And I installed
on your
a
Mac.
New one in my... Huh? What?
Like on your Mac?
Yes, like on my Mac, except for hard mail. I call it hard mail.
Wait, is that a thing I should be doing? Hard mail? How do I... What? Are you
going
to pay for that?
Hard mail? No. It's included. It's an included service. It's part of your package.
I see.
You get hard mail, and I also put a bag. I put a bag so that it catches my mail. It's got Velcro, and then I bought a staple gun so I could staple gun it to the garage. Now that catches my mail.
I see.
Hard mail. Snail mail, they call it. Hard mail. Like hard mail.
No.
Did you ever see my soft mail? I'm sorry I never got your soft mail, Alex.
Merlin, speaking of soft mail, there's a very upsetting thing that's been happening, which is since you said that you were leaving Twitter,
say I was leaving Twitter.
Since you said
you were
quitting Twitter in a rage to protest the racist,
yes,
white nationalist actions of CEO Jack Dorsey, if I may quote you exactly.
Quit your job, sir.
Now, since you said that, I'm getting DMs. People are DMing me about once a day.
I have begged you not to speak to anyone ever on my behalf.
I'm not speaking to them. They're speaking to me.
They're just asking the question.
And they DM me and they say, here's something that I think Merle would enjoy. And he's not on Twitter. Can you show it to him? It's like the, what is that? It's like the lazy man's like at reply. Like what? Like,
and then Anita Sarkeesian still won't follow you just because of how you were born. I appreciate people doing that. Yeah, it's real interesting. It's a little bit like who was talking about this? Alex, did you ever listen to that sad David Sedaris interview?
Yeah, it was weirder than I thought.
Yeah, but wasn't it different than any David Sedaris interview you've ever heard?
Yeah.
He's changed. It's different. He's real wise now and like different, and I don't know, I really enjoyed it. It was so sad, but I really loved hearing him and hearing him gulping water while Terry Gross asked him very, very difficult questions. But he talks about when he quit drinking.
Yeah.
And he just basically stopped. He just stopped drinking. And he did that kind of successful stop drinking where you just it isn't anything where you're like, it's not a big deal. You just say, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. And the key to the not drinking anymore is that you don't drink anymore. That's the key. There's no program. You just stop drinking ever again. Mm-hmm. He talks about being at a wedding in England. Did you hear this part?
Yeah.
With like, it was like, oh, come on, governor, you got to do the toast. And he's like, no, thank you. I have some sparkling water here. I'm happy to do the toast. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not how it works. You got to have the alcohol in your cups. And then the woman literally stuck her fingers in champagne and shoved her fingers into David Sedaris' mouth, which, knowing what I know about David Sedaris, must have been pretty fucking wild. And she cut his mouth with her fingernail. So it's funny to me that the whole point of my exercise is I just need to not see. I don't even want to talk about it. I just need it out of my life for a little while. It's not that I'm mad, but then you send me links. You keep sending me links, and you say, "Here's something somebody on the internet says you should look at on Twitter because you're not looking at Twitter."
What am I supposed to do? Not send it?
I don't know. I mean, that would be a failure of your commission.
Now, Merlin.
Yes.
Now, as you know, you've bravely decided to quit Twitter to take a stand against the system.
Remind me, why did I quit?
Well, it's because you're protesting the orange Cheeto man who is cowardly allowed on the platform. By,
did you know his real name is Drumpf?
That I did know that.
A lot
I heard
of people
that
don't
on,
know his real name is Drumpf.
I heard that on the John Oliver program.
now, Merlin, hey, look, it's a banner and a band. Yay,
you know,
welcome to the resistance.
And you know, Merlin, I worry about you, and I worry, you know, I think, I stay up at night.
Thank you, man.
And my mind is churning, and I'm thinking about Merlin, I'm like, is he missing out on what's going on Twitter? You know, is he,
willfully deciding to not look at Twitter, does he know he's not seeing Twitter?
Is he missing all his friends? So, this week, I did a little project, a little extracurricular project.
Okay.
And I approached all of your Twitter friends, and I said,
I'm sorry, Max, real quick, did you do this on Twitter?
No, I didn't. And okay. I did it in real life. And I said, you know, our friend Merlin has bravely quit Twitter to protest the racist policies of CEO Jack Dorsey.
Thank you.
I feel like he's missing all of his friends. And I said, would you please record a tweet from Merlin into your phone and send it in?
You did not.
I did do that. And
you're
I've
not
got,
funning. Did you actually fucking do this?
I did. And I now would like to present to you.
Wait a minute. You're saying I get bespoke audio Twitter?
I now present to you Merlin's Twitter.
Hi, Merlin. It's your old pal, Matt Howie, here. As you may know, I quit Twitter, too, and I'm here to support you in solidarity. Here's to not posting our free content on a white nationalist site. To be honest, I don't really feel like I'm missing your voice from the internet since I get like 3 or 4 hours a week of new podcasts from you. So thanks, Merlin, for being a guiding star and an all-around good egg. Is your card the Two of Hearts?
Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Bye.
I swore I'd never say this to anyone publicly, but here we are. On Analog, a show I do with Mike Hurley, I talked for a long time about seeking out my white whale, about that one person on Twitter that I really wanted to follow me and just acknowledge that I exist.
Oh no!
And I think it's appropriate to say that that person was Merlin Mann.
Oh my God,
and when
died.
He followed me, it
dead.
Genuinely made me extremely happy. May have made him pretty miserable, but it made me real happy. So thanks for that follow,
oh
Merlin,
God.
And thanks for all the funny things you've done all over the place, including Twitter. Your pal, Casey.
Today I had a farm fresh egg omelet with mixed field greens, heirloom tomatoes, sprinkled with pink fleur-de-sel, with a trio of sausage de petit déjeuner sliced diagonally. Hashtag, what's Tiff eating?
I know about so many amazing people because of you. Most notably, John Roderick and John Siracusa, and most recently, Max Temkin and Alex Cox. You've also inspired me to make a podcast, which is the most fun work-related thing that I do on a regular basis. Thanks.
Oh my God.
The solstice grind is killing me. I'd ignore it, but the post-warmine progression has slowed me down to the point where I'm still 18 points below the light level cap. The solstice stupidity is actually my best option. Forsaken can't come soon enough. Pound sign Destiny.
Hi, Merlin. It's me, your friend Jen. Just wanted to tell you that I think you are so amazing. You are the amazing combination of hilarious and kind, and you make the internet a much happier place. I miss you on Twitter, but I think it is extremely cool that you are taking care of yourself, and more people should follow your example, not just in this, but in basically everything. You make Max and Alex so happy every week, and that makes me happy too. And to all you Dubai Friday cucks out there, or wherever you call yourselves, check out friendshippingpodcast.com if you know what's good for you. This is a threat. You have one day.
I've had the pleasure of spending time with Merlin Mann a handful of times in the last 7 years, and what's interesting about Merlin is every single time I feel like I'm in the presence of a superstar. And yet, I feel like I'm there with my old pal Merlin Mann, and that's what makes Merlin so special. So thanks, Merlin, for all the stuff you do. Especially Dubai Friday, because I love that podcast more than almost any other. So thanks.
Hey, Alex. Hey, Max. It's your old friend Todd Vaziri here. I'm running around San Francisco looking for Merlin because since he's been off Twitter, I've missed him so much. Well, I'm not really running around because of the broken leg. Yeah. I can't actually even walk right now, but podcasting is the theater of the mind. So let's just leave it at that. So, since he's been off Twitter, I don't know who to have Parks and Recreation GIF Wars with. I don't know who to talk about Full Media Blackout with. I don't even know who to talk about if Amy Adams is a monster or not. Defeat me, you coward! If you guys talk to Merlin, let him know that I'm still on Twitter. I still haven't given up on Twitter yet, just like I haven't given up on America.
If Sharp Objects was a Stephen King property, the season would end with the entire town on fire.
God, I hate this keyboard. Oh. I could die right now. Holy shit, Max. Holy shit. How do you get anything done doing such kindnesses for your friends? You guys, I can't believe, you know, I feel like what I did was, I don't want to overcomplicate it, but it was extremely brave. Of me. It was very brave of me to look down. I said, sir, your white nationalism will not stand. Your cowardice, sir, your use of drumpf will not stand. And now I don't know. Am I second guessing it? Should I be back on Twitter?
I'll just tell you my. I can just.
Is this something you could
here.
Do weekly? Is I guess a thing I'm asking.
Oh, absolutely. I don't have anything else going on. But no, I'll tell you. I can just tell you from my perspective. I mean, since you and Matt left, I've been spending a lot less time on Twitter. I mean, I mean this in all seriousness. I've been spending a lot less time on Twitter.
I didn't leave Twitter.
Since you bravely quit.
I'm adding the desk.
So
so misunderstood.
I'm sorry, not that you left. Since you stopped using Twitter, I know that you're not reading my tweets on Twitter, it's less fun for me to use.
I have an update on that after you're done. But have you got the fear a little bit?
What's the fear?
I don't know. I mean, have you got a nudge to think like maybe this isn't wholesome?
I know it's not wholesome. I know that it makes me. I know that every time I go on Twitter, it makes me miserable. And all I was going to say is I have come to realize since you took your break or didn't leave or whatever you did, where you stopped posting and reading Twitter or whatever you want to call that, it's less fun for me because you're not reading my tweets.
Oh, I know that feeling.
And it's just like, you know, it's like, I'm not saying like the only reason I'm on Twitter is to post funny things for Merlin, but it's like 30% less fun.
That's a big part of what you do, though, when you make anything. This is an old thing of mine, but like, I feel like, what did Stephen King call it? My ideal reader, right? In that case, it's his wife, I think Tabitha. And she's his first reader and his ideal reader. And he writes for her. And hopes everybody else likes it too. So I definitely know that feeling. But in the age of muting, it's hard to even know who sees your stuff. You know what
well,
I mean? It's
are you saying you muted me?
No, and I love your card game. I play it every night.
Thank you.
That was so funny. You made my whole family laugh so fucking hard.
I did notice you sent us a picture of something, and I saw that Cards Against Humanity, there was some stuff stacked under it. So I was just wondering, every night when you play the game, do you get it out from under all that stuff, and then you put it back? It seems like a lot of work.
Honey, go brush your teeth, and we'll play an hour of Cards Against Humanity, which is a game you play. And then Alex zoomed in on the fourth doctor's head, and it was real creepy. I'm never sending you guys a photo again. That was
Why
a bad
would you
idea.
Just leave the head, though?
He's got two heads and two hearts. He's a Time Lord.
It's a trophy.
You have to scare an action figure.
You have to show the other toys what happens. That's the price of...
it's like a Pinochet type situation. Like, who wants to get on a helicopter?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the price of disloyalty.
Oh, God. No.
Oh, what did that used to mean?
Oh, I don't know. No comment.
We started watching the Top Scallop season of Top Chef again.
Oh, that the Top Scallop. Wait, is that Top Chef Masters?
No,
it's All Stars with what's the guy's name? The Italian guy.
But I'm thinking of a Top Chef All Stars.
Oh, you know that's a really good show. They take it very, very seriously. It's taken very seriously. But I took you off your topic, Max. Thank you so much for bringing all those wonderful people to my doorstep. I do have a quick update.
Yes, please.
I have, so what I've allowed myself to do is on one device in one app, I'm logged in. So Chrome on my iPad, and I started looking in a few times a day. And it's not as terrible as I remember, but it's not nice enough to make me want to come back. But what was it that precipitated it? Oh, I was hearing news on Google News about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. A lot of people forget the Huckabee part. She was doing a press conference, Barack Hussein Obama. And so I went and I dove into political Twitter for just a minute.
Rather be a Hussein than
really
a Huckabee.
She's really something, isn't she? Her defense of
are we allowed to say that?
What's that?
Are we allowed to criticize
her? She's something.
I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, okay. But I'm just saying I wouldn't attack a woman, but that's just me. But
oh,
I mean,
my God, you're right. You know what?
You
just schooled me.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're
right. It takes all kinds.
Smoky eye. And so I dove into that because she was supposedly defending the president's, you know, he loves to call people dogs. Like he doesn't understand what dogs are, how dogs do.
Oh, yes.
And so he was calling the lady from TV. You know that's not how dogs do. And so he was calling the lady from TV a dog. Miss Huckabee Sanders was defending that by saying, "Oh, come on, he's nasty to lots of people." it's racist. You know what? You know what it is? That is casual racism toward dog ladies.
Mm.
To single her out for that treatment. No, he treats everybody that terribly. Mm. How even could you say that? And also, she's a woman. So, the hell of a time. Yeah, I popped in a little bit, saw some things. I saw that photo of you and your dad. which is maybe one of the great things of all time.
Isn't that a good photo?
That is, was that his idea?
No. So we went out to dinner for my dad's birthday.
Tell people about this photo, because tell people, if somebody, God forbid, has muted you on Twitter, tell people what this photo is, because it's maybe the best thing.
I don't think anyone's muted me.
No, you'd know. You get a pop-up notification.
It's a picture of me and my dad from when I was a kid, and we're dressed the same. So it's very cute.
You're sitting on his lap, and you have a mustache.
Yeah.
It's 1990, so you're pretty little.
Basically, I was out to dinner with my dad, and he had mentioned, and it was for his birthday dinner, and he was like, "Hey, I adopted a classroom on Donors Choose, which is kind of like a Kickstarter for teachers, and, you know, just a local classroom, and I want to fund this project." And he's like, "Would you tweet about it so people will help fund the project?" And I was like, "Yeah, well, I should put a picture of us, like a childhood picture or something, in there, so it's like cute, so people hit the retweet button."
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
And you know, you gotta. Yeah, I'll go window dressing in there, you know? And I was like, "Do you have that picture of when I was a kid?" Because we used to have this, like, in the house where we're wearing the sweaters, and he had it on his phone, ready to go.
Oh, you, there's such a resemblance. Oh, my gosh, it's remarkable. You look so much like your dad.
I'm seeing my dad today. I'm going with the Dr. Professor Temkin to go to a magic store. We're going to go look at magic tricks.
Voila. Hey, please tell Professor Dr. Mr. Temkin I said hi.
Okay, I will.
Well, that's enough of that warmth.
All right. So let me just make sure I have my, I've just got my notepad here. I just want to make sure I have all the
yes.
right, you know, I don't like to leave without my action items, Merlin.
Okay.
The meeting. So,
yeah, sure.
Okay. So when people, so do not tell you when people DM me and say, "Shit, send this to Merlin."
Could you do them all in one?
Check box
number
one.
Do like a Google Doc or something that I can just look at once a week?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. No, sure. Okay. I was actually looking for a way to add overhead to this. So if you do have a tweet for Merlin.
You could also do it in Markdown. That'd be
because,
fine.
Because, as you know, Merlin is boycotting Twitter. He's quit Twitter because of the mm-hmm. racist policies of this terrible company.
Thank you.
And thank you for your service. So please, if you have a tweet that you want to share with Merlin, just DM it or tweet it to me, and I'll create some sort of spreadsheet system. Where I'll ingest all of the notes and organize them, and I'll share that with Merlin.
Okay.
So do not share the directly every tweet that people send, but do pass messages on to my dad.
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. Yeah, that's all fine. You know, whatever works for you. I guess I could also follow you on Twitter, and then I'd be able to see when people tweet at you about me. Would that be faster for you?
You could build a little Twitter search.
I could get Alex. Can I get a workflow that follows Max? Is that what I would do?
What if Merlin? Well, how about this? Okay, wait. Yeah. All right, here we go. Because you know you got to think about this, Merlin. How does it scale?
How does it scale up?
How do you scale up?
I want my 10x. Yeah.
Now, how about this? Now, what if we get Twitter out of the equation completely? Right, as part of our heroic boycott. What if I just say, if you have a message for Merlin, you email me. Right now,
am I
going to get a lot of emails? Absolutely. But here's the brilliant part. I'm going to forward all my email to you. You're going to deal with it.
Okay. Okay.
What do you?
And then
what
I
do you
could
think?
Get a workflow that would automatically post that to Twitter, and I could follow that. Would that include the images, Alex? How would that work?
I don't know.
Well, you're the one who likes workflow. I thought you were the workflowy.
No. I'm the workflowy in training.
Oh.
I was out of the game for a while. Still used Automator.
Now they pulled you back in. Work.
I know.
I'll be damned. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever works for you, Max. I know. I assume you're busy. I don't know. You could whatever
right, right
works
now I
for
have
you.
It set so that every time I get an email the lights in the house flash on and off three times just to keep me
fine.
Updated.
Yeah.
I love those Hue Labs things that are like when it reaches exactly 63 degrees, flash everything blue. That's handy.
Well, how else are you gonna know when it's exactly 63 degrees? What are you gonna just not know that?
How else are you gonna know?
Yeah.
Numbers?
Yeah, I'm not gonna go through my life and not know when it's 63 degrees.
I just, you know what? I appreciate all this. This is super nice of you as my friends. I just want to encourage everybody to be as brave as me in not doing something. Find the courage. You know, look into you and think about what Drumpf has done to you, that orange Cheeto pumpkin man. And I want you to find the bravery to do something that makes you feel better. For national, speaking out for the in-group.
You guys want to do the money zone?
Yes.
Well, before that, Merlin, can you hear any fans coming in through our edge?
There's no noise. There's
it's
never
so
any fan
cold.
Noise.
Yes.
No, it's sweltering. It is muggy.
Noise.
It is muggy and hot. It's a swamp in this room.
Normally,
Alex, are you getting an enhanced interrogation, do you think?
Is this
one of those wet Guantanamo things? You get somebody wet and they sit in a little chair and with a fan on them?
Slowly, something's going to start dripping on my head in intervals that are totally
it's
random.
It's so muggy in this room.
I mean, yeah, that's why the fans go on before and after.
And yeah, but that's not how a fan works. No, it's not
a
like
fan
you can
just moves hot air around. That's you have correct. To condition the air.
Yes. Well, yeah. There is
well,
conditioning.
That's, we have a damp. The air conditioning is too loud, so we turn that off. And then we got these silent Dyson fans that use science in some way to move the air around.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is the compromise. But you can't hear that on the microphone.
Sure. Maybe. We'll see. All right.
Email Alex if you can't hear it. Wait a minute. Did you hear the Mabim Bam Justin is getting the vasectomy?
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
That is one of the funniest things I've heard recently
so
on a podcast.
Funny.
That killed me.
It was on the calendar. Yeah,
and some guys black out when I knew that.
And I love the video that's playing while he's waiting.
Oh, boy. All right.
The only thing that would be worse than sitting in the waiting room to get your vasectomy consultation is to be forced to watch a looped video of how the procedure works.
Oh, my God.
I don't need to hear the word vas deferens too often.
That episode. I mean, this can't be our podcast of just saying bits on other podcasts that are funnier than ours, but that was one of the funniest things I've heard. That was so funny.
The Stacey's mom thing was very funny, too. When they tried to play, Stacey's mom with minor chords. And Justin couldn't do it. He kept going to the major chords. It was so funny.
He's very
happy. She passed. You know, she passed this week.
What? No.
Yeah, Stacey's mom passed.
No, you're fucking with me. No, okay. That's a fictional character, right?
Stacey's mom dead. Google Stacey's mom dead.
Is this like Macaulay Culkin dead? Like, you know, it happens every few years, but not really.
Oh wait. Oh, is this your fake news? Okay.
Okay.
Fucking called
Stacey's
it.
Stacey's mom dead.
Merlin, remember that time that you read the story about the diarrhea in the strip club and it turned out to be fake news and you didn't look at it carefully enough?
The diarrhea in the strip. Oh, that was my fault. I'm sorry. That was my fault. I should have read that more carefully.
Yep.
Diarrhea strip club.
It's that all over again.
Oh my God! This is the problem. See, this is all the fake news.
Well, I'm actually looking at the report here that take you in, and it already starts off world-renowned MILF Stacey's mom, made famous by rock band
AP Style Guide.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hang on now.
I want that on a coffee cup.
I'm getting a little brainwave here.
What are you getting?
Hang on now.
Are you getting a radiation vibe? Did I say that right? Red dragon tattoo.
And I have a new Twitter bio.
Okay.
Oh, no. All right.
I'm sorry to hear you quit your job at Hellman's. I was sorry to hear that.
It was causing real... So did I talk about this on the podcast? That I made my Twitter bio CEO of the JanSport Backpack Corporation? And then people...
And then you found the absolute unit.
That was funny. But for a week, people would... Whenever I would tweet something about politics, people would retweet it with a little arrow going...
Oh, the arrow.
CEO of the JanSport Backpack Company, everyone. Like, he's...
Oh, my God.
He's like... hates Trump or whatever. So I changed it because I didn't want to get in trouble with JanSport.
Yeah.
And I changed it to CEO of the Hellman's Mayonnaise Corporation. And the same thing still happened. People would be like, I would tweet something. Like, I did one yesterday.
I bet it's Laura Rosen. Laura Rosen is big on the arrow.
It was just random. It was like random, like hashtag resistance, like wine moms would retweet me and be like, hey, everyone, it's an authority here. The CEO of the Hellman's Mayonnaise Corporation hates Trump. But so yesterday I did a tweet that was admittedly ill-advised when there was like, so there was this Omarosa thing going around where she's like, yeah, there's a tape of Trump saying the N-word. And I think that stuff is so fucking funny how everyone, CNN breaks in with breaking news. A tape exist.
From 2016. It's from like 2 years ago.
Yeah, but. Okay, but let's say he says it live on TV, just for the sake of argument.
Well, yeah.
What do you think his supporters are going to be? They're going to go, my Lord. my goodness.
This is a bridge too far.
This changes everything.
He doesn't like the black.
So I did a tweet yesterday that said, if the tape is true and Trump used the N-word, I'm probably not voting for him again.
And you got wine moms. You were lousy with wine moms.
I was crawling with wine moms. Boy, did that. There was a fucking professor who came after me.
No.
What is that? That person's username has the word professor in it.
Wait, hold on. Because in her bio, she says instructor.
But her Twitter username.
Well, yeah, but I could be Professor Cox and like no one.
You're saying, yeah, okay. Professor, she does have a professor in her name, not gonna say her name.
Yeah. So this person says to me, okay, we already know he talking about grabbing women by their private parts. It was on tape. why did you vote for him then? And I was like, what am I supposed to, I was like, what are my options here? I was like going through my head of like, okay,
you could mansplain the plan. Joke.
There's two ways this evening can go. Which one will I choose?
Yeah. So I was like, I could be like, I'm joking, or I was like, what do I do here? So I just replied, fake news, just to see what happened. Cause I do think that's what a Trump person would say.
And then she goes,
LOL, but you'll believe Omarosa. Okay. Whatever pulls you back from the dark side. And then I was just like, yeah, very reputable. I've seen her on TV. I think that ended it. That was my whole
day
yesterday.
She got Cabernet.
Oh, and then that was my whole day yesterday. And then I guess a couple months ago, the company of Instagram emailed us and they're like, can we come to your office for a comedy show for like our offsite, like team building thing in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they asked me in like, I don't know when it was a few months ago. And I was like, and they were like, can we come in August? And I was like, yeah, I'll probably like to do that in August. And, Kevin reminded me on Monday that we had Instagram coming to do a 3 p.m. to do a comedy show in the totally sober comedy show as part of their corporate team building exercise. And I was like, what was I thinking?
Who was the co-host of that?
Cleveland Anderson from the Lincoln Lodge. Yeah.
So you went through with it?
I love him.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that is not a 3 p.m.
It didn't. It didn't bomb. We didn't bomb. Like we got laughs, but it didn't. Wasn't good. It wasn't a good show. What do you expect? What do you think? It's like everyone's there with their coworkers. They're not going to laugh at it. You're not going to like really let your guard down. You know, comedy, you have to like, that's why comedy works in the dark. I don't think people understand this. People don't laugh if you're not in the dark, because you need the anonymity of the dark to really be able to let your guard down and like really let a laugh rip in like a,
and
you know,
it also helps to have chosen willfully to be at a comedy show because you like to laugh at comedy. In the dark. That's a long way from this is compulsory and it's going to build the team for you to laugh. That's a tough draw.
Yeah. And then we tried to like put a hat on it. We tried to, you know, it was like, hey, welcome to your compulsory team building, you know, event or whatever. And did they not like those jokes. So we just didn't, you know,
some comedy's not funny.
It was a hard, it was a challenging show. But anyway, we always do these shows at fucking convention halls. Like when we do, you know, we try and do our panel and big fluorescent lights, those lights that really make your butthole clench up when you go in the room.
Yeah.
That is not comedy lighting. You know, you got nowhere to hide in those lights. That's not funny lighting.
No, no.
About 50% or more of comedy is, are there drinks and are the lights off?
drinks and lighting. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's heavy.
It's also, I mean, I don't go to comedy shows like I used to. I used to, you know, when people come through town, I'd go see comedy, Mitch Hedberg or Marc Maron or whatever. And, you know,
but not,
not
Hannah Gadsby, huh? Interesting.
Not who?
Keep going, Merlin. Keep going.
You ever notice that every TED Talk begins and ends with thunderous applause? Have you ever really thought about that? Like every single TED Talk begins with warm ideas for thinking. And then like, it's just this ravish. And then somebody goes, okay, turns out neckties. And you're like, okay, great. And then at the end, it's like, like it's a fucking mosaic event. Like he's come out with, Moses has come out with the tablets and shit is fucking real. Turns out there's a 14th commandment.
Well, they have Phil Spector producing those things.
How's that?
They have Phil Spector producing those things.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's smart. Wall of Sound, they called it.
Yep.
There's
comedy
one,
lighting.
Do you think that sometimes those are faked with the TED Talk? I mean, literally, for YouTube, they amplify the clapping.
I can tell you there's positive. We know from doing our events, Alex, that like you can really shape the perception of what's happening in a show or in a speech or something based on the mic, where the mics are placed and how they're mixed into the feed. And you can make it look like a politician is giving the greatest speech of his life or like he's completely bombing based on if the audience has mics or not. And that's like a kind of a political trick you'll see sometimes. Of like,
no, I know, but... Some of that's how like that's like across the board normally that you can tell that's what's happening in a TED Talk. But there's one I'll do it. You know, Queen of Shitty Robots, Simone Gerrit. I liked her TED Talk, but it clearly wasn't. It was like, I'm going to do a shtick, and the room was silent the whole time. No laughter, nothing whatsoever. And then
I don't think that's a funny audience.
I don't know why they had her do one. But then at the end, it just sounded so wrong.
Can I also add one thing here to notes? I hope this is the right podcast. You've probably certainly heard this. This is another one of those podcasts that everybody should hear. I think it's this 538 podcast called Why the Dean Scream Sounded So Different on TV.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And Alex, you need to hear this because it's all about mics.
Yes.
And the peculiar qualities of different mics. And hearing the Dean scream from different sources, there was a peculiarity of, I guess, the diaphragm or the way that mic works that made him sound insane.
It was like overdriven and compressed. And it's the same thing where, you know, how Alex Jones.
And the room noise was deafening. He couldn't hear himself.
Right.
He didn't know how loud he sounded. The mic did him no service.
So I was too young to work on that campaign, but I followed it very closely. It was like my first campaign that I really like fell in love with. And I have a lot of friends who worked on that campaign. And one of the stories that they tell for the people who were there that night is they all thought that he crushed. That is a historic. That's going to go down as one of the great political speeches. Everyone in that room was dialed up to an 11.
Up to the point of the scream, he was on a roll.
Yeah.
With the way that he, that was a great speech in the end with, we're going to go to gun, we're going to go to, it was all so good. In the room, it really sold, huh?
Yes.
Well, if you listen to the rest of the audio, it does, like, it was just a perfect storm of audio disasters that made it,
I have so many things on my stack here that I have to fucking look up. I actually have a great thing about this that relates to our assignment for today for the homework.
Oh, good. We also have a new corner to introduce at some point.
Oh, right, the new bit, yes. Okay,
hang on. Not a bit, it's a corner.
Okay.
It's like a paper cut or a plane crash.
Okay. Oh, Alex, edit all this awkward silence out while I log into my, where I authenticate with Amazon.
No, you go. Well, Alex and I'll talk while you look for it. How's it going, buddy?
Oh. What was that noise?
Who made that noise?
That exhale just became booger.
Who made that noise? And also with you. They changed it, right?
Oh, yes. And with your spirit. Mm-hmm.
What?
That's what you say. Instead of, and also with you, it's under his eye. Spirit. Oh, that show really went off the rails, man.
You think so?
Oh, I mean, you know, I just...
Everyone ends with a indie rock song and her saying, fuck you, to the camera.
Yeah, I just, there's only so many... Like, there's only so many female castrations I can take in a month where I'm like, okay, enough.
They give Rory a big Band-Aid diaper.
Oh, my God. That was so... she's one of the few people I just cannot disconnect from a character
And the unflattering super close-ups where you can tell that she's in her 30s now.
Yeah.
It's like, so stop. Stop.
Don't do
that to Rory.
Exactly. It's like, oh, God.
She's so cute, and she likes coffee. Like, don't zoom in on her. Don't do that.
Oh, no. Don't take her clip.
You know, Lane put a book out. Lane has a book out now.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah. Gilmore Girls Lane book.
Laura Graham also has a book, which I have, but have not read yet. Gilmore Girls Lane book. A lot of good books. This 2018 has been a good year for books so far.
All right,
I'm a book guy now.
I have my bit. So this is from Clay Johnson's book, The Information Diet, which I think is very relevant to Merlin's Twitter fast and also... Yeah.
Well, my brave statement.
Your brave stance of boycotting Twitter and also our assigned reading today. But this is a story that totally rung true to me. He was working on the digital on the Dean campaign. He said he writes the week before the Iowa caucuses, I remember asking the campaign's pollster Paul Ford, not that Paul Ford, by how much we were going to win Iowa. His response was, "We're not. John Kerry is going to win by 18 points." Mm-hmm. My jaw dropped. I wasn't sad or disappointed. I was mad at Paul and a little disappointed in him. How could he be such a traitor? Hadn't he seen the news? He was clearly incompetent. Any fool could see that we'd correctly leverage the internet in Iowa and that this puppy was in the bag. Howard Dean would win Iowa and go on to beat George W. Bush.
Be in the bag.
But Paul was right and we
no
were
one.
Wrong. Well, that's more,
the,
that's more of the Mike Huckabee's son's bit, but you know, I don't want to steal his bit.
My father strapped a dog to a car.
Paul was right and we were crazy. You know the rest of the story. Howard Dean lost the Iowa caucus by nearly 20 points and would go on to give a concession speech with a yell that became his defining moment. Only the political intelligentsia would remember his use of the web. The rest of the electorate remembers him for that terrible scream.
I remember I had friends who worked on that too, and I think it was a big Drupal thing. There's a big
They rolled out
a special version. I feel like Jeff Simmons might have worked on this, but basically they rolled out some kind of super scale version of Drupal that would allow them to have like this CMS site that would like everything would be on brand, everything would be the same and be totally controllable and easy to use by tons of different people in different places, which seems really normal now, but I think it was a fairly huge deal in whatever that was, 2003.
Yeah, I remember. The blogger for the campaign, Zephyr Teachout, now running for Attorney General in New York.
Big, cool name.
Big New York political player. Anyway, but the thing I remember from this is he said the morning after the caucuses where Dean gave that speech, our Burlington, Vermont offices were filled with more delusion. One of my colleagues ran up to me as I walked into the office and said, "Clay, did you see the governor's speech last night? It was awesome. He's totally back. We're gonna win this thing."
Oh, God.
But isn't that crazy? Like. I think about that little passage from this book all the time because, like, it's so funny because, like, this doesn't the same thing repeat itself when you talk to people about Trump and they're like, I hear people say this all the time of, like, yeah. So-and-so is going to happen in 2 years or 3 years. And oh, Trump will be out of there before then. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think he'd last 6 months. I thought he'd quit.
Well, you thought that recount was going to get him.
$500.
All right, Merlin. Let's do the money corner, and then you have your new bit. The timeout corner? What is it?
I want to tell you about Pineapple Bucks.
All right. Well, listen, everybody. It's that time of the podcast.
Oh, it's that time. It's time for the money zone.
Oh, we're doing it.
Digga, money zone.
It's that time of the podcast, everybody. Here's the deal. You've got money, and we want your fucking money. You can go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com to give us your money. For $5 a month, you join our Patreon. You become an official supporter of Dubai Friday. You're probably wondering, well, what's in it for me? I assume, because at this point, I think if you haven't backed our podcast, you're essentially a selfish person. So I assume that's what you're thinking. And here's what's in it for you is you get a whole second episode of the podcast every week. We do a whole after show and you get a little private RSS feed from Patreon that may or may not work. And then you'll email us for customer support and we'll say, sorry, we can't help you with your feed. You have to email Patreon for that.
Sorry.
And then what else? And then at the end of the month, we are sending out a little. We have
at the end of this month,
which is
this calendar month,
August 2018. Mm-hmm. August 20, not to date the podcast, but Trump is still president. It is August 2018. At the end of this month, August, we are sending out a little care package in the mail with some delightful illustrations and art prints and treats for our $10 subscribers. So if you go all the way up to the Cox's Cucks level, you will get a verified, certified treat from Dubai Friday. From me and Alex and Merlin. And you can go
we're going to personally lick every one of them.
Uh-huh. You can go on the, and you can use that to clone
thing.
Merlin.
That's
you can
job.
Make a little Merlin clone and get his organs.
I'll go where you work and knock the prints out of your mouth.
And I think we
2,200 more. I love my job. I better get another Diet Coke.
Oh, that reminds me.
I chewed this one up real good.
Okay, now that we're talking about money, RX Bars doesn't give us any money, and so I was eating one, and I eat one of these every morning. And here's the thing with paper, it won't suddenly gush into your mouth in a strange way that has never happened before.
Would you get a little liquid RX bar?
And it wasn't like melted. It came from the kitchen pantry, and I was like,
Your RX bar gushed in your mouth unexpectedly?
It gushed multiple times. Like the dates like popped or something. I thought they were dried. Anyway.
It specifically says on the front, no BS.
Yeah.
No BS. It says that right on there.
All right.
That's not supposed to happen. Prank bar.
Speaking of, that actually reminds me, speaking of the RX bars,
are you done with the money zone?
The Dubai. Well, I have one more request for people.
Because people got to know. You got to tell them, you got to give us your fuckingmoney.com, and we appreciate your support.
And I think we can say that it is August 31st, Central, midnight Central time is the cutoff.
Yeah,
11:59. Okay.
I just want to specify for the record that when Merlin says that we appreciate your support, he's only speaking for himself.
Mm. That's true. I'm very brave.
Yeah. The Dubai Friday Discord got into our iTunes reviews this week, and they're very funny.
Oh, no.
But most of them are. There was someone who very cruelly said that they don't like when Alex eats an RX bar on the podcast because it demonstrates exactly. disrespect for our listeners.
Exactly that.
And that may be the top review for the podcast. And just as a favor to our listeners, if you do, I know that. I mean, if you're listening
please
to this podcast,
please don't encourage them to do anything, please.
But listen, if you're listening
to this
podcast,
reminding them of things they can do.
I know, but if you're listening to this podcast, I have to assume that you don't have a lot going on in your life. And if you could please just stop jerking off for 10 minutes and go on iTunes and write a nice review of our podcast, then people
why don't you,
see it. Why
don't you try cranking our hog?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Well, help us out a little bit.
Well, I don't know.
We need to finish, too.
Wait, what else do people have going on, you know? Go on iTunes and leave a nice review and tell, just knock that one down the ranks a little bit of that Alex eats an RX bar on the podcast, you know?
I think
it's a feature, not a bug.
I'm shocked at how few people are angry about my laugh or my voice.
Oh my God, please stop talking about this.
I mean, there's a few, but...
Oh, are they upset about the vocal fry?
Oh, yeah, but normally on any other show I do, that's the whole thing. Good job, guys. You drone out.
It's because you keep promoting things you do. People are going to listen to it, and they're going to have remarks because you're a woman.
I don't do any
you're
of
woman-ish.
The work, though. I'm good.
So, anyway, thanks for your support. Max is very grateful that you would take the time to help us out and give us your fucking money. Thank you very much.
One more businessy business thing. People, it wasn't until last week we were like, hey, we're going to send out more treats. Then maybe like 10 people emailed like, oh, I never got my poster. And I feel really bad because nobody, it's like, oh, you waited until now? Like, we'll fix that. We fixed that for you. And like nobody complained. And I'm not used to people not complaining. So thank you. I'm going
to eat. Didn't you address somebody needing to update their address?
Yeah, it's different for everybody. But like,
Oh, boy.
No, but it's like 5 people. It's I'm pretty sure it's done.
All right, well, thanks for what you're doing.
Thanks for listening to that. It's some sort of crispy, upsetting. It's called a bark. What is that?
It is a bark. Then it's part of the confession corner. Well, we'll get to it later.
All right,
confession corner.
All right, end of the money zone. Mm-hmm. Merlin, tell us about your new bit, your hilarious new bit that you've engineered.
Thanks for framing that, buddy.
Yep.
Alex, you want to go first? So I
what is it?
Can you explain it? Well, no, I just had an anecdote that I wanted to share from this morning that seemed kind of on brand. And then Alex said that she had a confession, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a confession. I'll confess.
Okay. Okay, what's your confession?
No, Alex starts us off.
Okay.
You still eat your nuts?
well, there's something I've realized.
Best deference?
I have fairly regular bowel movements, but I realize that any podcast I record that isn't like if I'm just a guest somewhere, I always have to shit before that podcast. Like this one, no, it's fine.
In my band, we used to call it a pre-show. Everybody would have to take a dump before we played.
Is it like a nerves thing?
It's a thing. It's totally a thing.
It's so strange.
Especially if you had a lot of coffee and cigarettes.
It's like
we
how
used to do.
It's like how a bird before a bird takes off in flight, they vacate their bowels so they're lighter and more agile in the air.
Or like a fawn trying to run away might drop a duke.
Yeah.
Leave a superintendent.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Things that aren't outside
of my
body. We
say regular, Alex. What do you call regular? Is that in composition or on a timetable?
Both. I would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you make a little sausage?
Do you, I'm correct on the scale. What's called it? The Richter scale. What is it? The poop scale.
The rectum scale, it's called.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's it called? The Higgs boson? What's it called? What's that scale called? Poop scale.
Women don't shit.
Ugh. I guess you're about the Bristol stool chart.
Bristol stool scale.
Yep,
that's
there we
it.
Go. Yep.
I'm a tight four.
Do you want to give the timetable? Usually it's morning and then.
So when
in,
you say regular
evening,
though, you do it once a day usually.
No, two.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently three if something unexpected.
If you get nervous, you feel like you get nervous, and then that communicates. That's
no,
how the body works. You know,
that's
it sends
the thing,
signals.
Though. When I'm nervous, I throw up. Like, okay. I mean, honestly, I.
Or if you eat a nut.
Or if
if you eat something besides bread or paper.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. So.
I'm okay.
okay.
Oh boy.
So is the confession corner? We just talk, is this where we just talk about poop?
Talk about
no,
poop?
No.
I'm
no,
still confused
no, no, no.
about what the bit is.
No, that was just some. That was some. Front,
So it was a really. First of all, good story, Alex. What's the story?
Damn it.
The story is you had an Alex bar and then had to drop a Duke.
No. That was. It's out of the show. It's all of the show. This morning, I went to get an RX bar. I normally eat a bar around 11 a.m. Wow. Because, you know, you're supposed, I don't know, you're supposed to do the 2 hour thing with the, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then okay. I opened the thing and there was this bag called Bark Thins. Have you ever seen these, Max? The Bark
Thins? I think I've seen them in the pantry.
Yes.
Bark
so
thins.
I was.
Wait, can you pass, so yeah, slide
have,
it over?
Have,
what is
have
this?
Some of these. Have, well, here's. Bark I assumed thins. That it was a healthy.
Oh,
I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Bark. It must be healthy. And I've seen it
well,
with
the pack
like,
the
almonds.
Packaging it looks like medicine. It looks
no,
like you know
doesn't.
That kind of like prescription.
It
no.
says almond, it says
no, it doesn't.
It says Bark Thins are a snackable sliver of mm-hmm. dark chocolate paired with real simple ingredients for a completely original take on snacking. Wow, they've mm-hmm. reinvented the snack.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is they should call it day food.
Comcast oh, business God. Is built for business.
Mm.
Bark Thin snacking.
Ooh, it's got
it's
snacking
got soy, chocolate.
It's got soy lecithin in it and emulsifier.
Soy lecithin.
Lecithin.
And
I love
snacking
that.
Chocolate. We've gotten drinking chocolate. I've never seen snacking
oh,
chocolate.
What?
Gosh, who even would snack on chocolate? That's so weird.
Well,
fair
okay,
trade, non-GMO.
It was like, oh, this is a healthy thing. Look at, oh, there's almonds. There's one with almonds. There's one with peanuts. Oh, this is great. But then I started eating it, and this is just chocolate with pretzels inside of it. I've just been eating a candy,
what?
Like a bag of
it's not,
candy
it's
bars.
It's not prescription candy at all.
No.
Okay.
So I've been eating a bag of candy bars since
yeah,
10 a.m. this
it's
morning.
It's just candy bars.
It's a healthy boy Wednesday.
I can't believe you like dark so chocolate. Good. Doesn't it have too much flavor for you?
Well, yes, but it's healthy. It's better for you. It's got
it's
the
way
cacao.
Way better for you.
Yeah.
That and a uh-huh. glass of wine, you'll live forever. Why do you think all those wine moms are drinking wine? It's their version of you. It's the Marin County version of Elon
this
Musk.
This is just candy. Okay. Thank you. I feel better. Merlin, your confession.
Oh, mine's not that interesting now. Mm. It's not very funny.
Mm.
Okay, so I sent you guys, go look at the image that I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the,
please.
Where is this?
It's in the super secret text channel. So as soon as I arrived at the office, so basically my daughter has been going through this stage where she's very into like, you know, a grilled cheese-ish sandwich. She's very into like panini. And and so yesterday we were home together and I made her one and she thought it was okay. But so I did not use the panini press. I used just the stovetop. So I arrived at the office this morning and as you can see in this text from my wife, she pulled out the panini press. She's going to really go for it. And we don't use it very much. So she pulled it out and she sent me a text that says how it's done. And she sent a picture of it. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, you probably have it set wrong. And I said, oh, yeah. OK, so you set the selector to griddle and you put it on high. And I said, the grill is for when it's open. And I was like, wait a minute. No, I just got this completely backwards. I said, stop. I'm wrong. You set it to grill panini. My bad. I said, God, that's bad interface. The griddle is for when it's unhinged. So grill panini is probably high. So, you know, I just basically wanted to explain to her, you know, because obviously she was confused about how to use it. And then that's her response.
I'm very confused about what went wrong and what you feel bad
about.
Read her
response. That
okay.
I just, you know.
Okay.
Please read it aloud.
All right. Oh, hold on. Madeline, oh, I wasn't asking you how to do it. I was telling you how it's done, as in I make a better panini than you.
Oh my God.
Oh shit, Merlin. I got pwned. Dunk. I will most def be sharing this amazing example of mansplaining.
Oh no, sweetheart. Seven, your 7 or 8 texts, you misunderstood. I'm just saying I'm better than you.
Merlin, did that vasectomy hurt your vas deferens?
My vas deferens are flaring. They're super raw around the edges. I can't finish.
No, you didn't even. You thought you were being hyperbolic by saying 7 or 8 texts. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 texts.
When food is involved with a child, you get involved. I have to go do my professional program.
11 texts explaining to your wife.
That's after I arrived at the office at 8:38 a.m.
Okay.
22 minutes before the start time.
Okay.
So anyways, good job, Madeline.
Wait, this is so fucking funny. This thread of you explaining it, grill is for when it's open and is governed by baby temperature settings. Oh, wait, stop, I'm wrong. Set to grill-panini. My bad. God, that's bad interface. Griddle, which I think you
griddle
meant
is for
griddle.
When it's unhinged.
So grill panini is probably high. I like that you're working the logic of this out in the text thread.
I'm looking at the photo from a distance, trying to remember how to use this godforsaken thing.
Even I know how to use this. You put it on hot and you close the thing.
You know what? From now on, I'm going to stop using anything by the Cuisinart family because of my braveness. Did you have a confession this week, Max? Did you do anything stupid and fucked up?
I don't know how to work this into confession, but I have a funny story from last night. I did a community meeting for this. Oh boy, how do I tell this story without getting myself in trouble? So I'm part of a.
I feel a Thursday edit coming.
I am a board member of a Parks and Rec type
board
mm-hmm. in Chicago that is in charge of a civic infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I could probably just tell the story. Well, here we go. All right, Alex, Engineer Chris, drop a marker so Alex can edit this out easily.
Wait, are there numbers involved in the thing you're about to talk about?
Numbers?
Yes.
What?
Okay, then never mind. Go ahead.
What are you talking about?
606?
Yes.
Okay.
But we don't call it that. We call it the Bloomingdale Trail.
Oh, my God. Oh, so, it's actually Cloud Gate.
No, excuse me. Bloomingdale,
wait,
606
no.
is the Cloud Gate name. Okay,
no,
we have
not.
The, it is, we have the cool
oh,
original
God.
Name of
okay.
what it is actually called by people, which is the Bloomingdale Trail.
Five
For
people
100
care
years,
about.
It was the Bloomingdale Trail. That's what it is. Okay, well, I'm on the board of this organization, Friends of the Bloomingdale Trail, and it's kind of like the High Line. And you know the High Line in New York, Merlin? It's like an elevated walking path.
Yeah. So it's like, tracks to trails kind of thing. You turn
yes.
something into something else and then
yes.
you can use it for stuff.
Yes. And it's
like make it a park kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's 3 miles of elevated park that go through the north side of Chicago. And I'm on the Friends of the Park Committee. So we're the sort of governing body on this thing. And I help them with like political organizing and, I don't know, projects and stuff. And we had a meeting last night, and one of the big controversial topics is on the eastern side of the trail, which is the sort of more developed-y, it's the sort of more gentrified, I don't know, what would you call it, like
it's
suburb-y.
The rich,
yeah, it's the rich side
yeah.
of the trail. There's this huge new development going up, a 6-story condo with all these little efficiency units in it that are going to cost $1 billion each. This is in Wicker Park or like mm-hmm. in between like Wicker and Logan. And this building, they're building it right on the trail, like right on it, like mm-hmm. like right abutting up against it. And what they want to do is build a little ramp that connects the trail into their building, because I assume yes. because it'll help with the marketing mm-hmm. of their building to be like, it's connected to the Bloomingdale Trail. And also mm-hmm. just for reference, there's no other buildings connected to this thing. Like you have to get off mm-hmm. at entrances and exits to the trail. And in exchange, well, what is the building giving us? They're offering us the one Achilles heel of this whole project, which is we have no public restrooms. Like there are no there's 3 miles of trail and no bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
It's because there's no money. Who's going to maintain, who's going to clean them? Like where does the bathroom supplies come from? Mm-hmm. Like it's really,
it's a huge issue here too. But I mean like that's, you know, for all kinds of reasons, including probably accessibility. There's all kinds of reasons that's what fucks up a lot of stuff is the bathrooms.
It truly is. And so what people do is they get off the trail and they go to neighborhood businesses and they ask to use the bathrooms. And that also creates problems for those businesses because those are, you know, I don't feel so bad if it's a Starbucks, but if it's like a little neighborhood gallery, like they're not equipped to have hundreds of people come in every day and right. befoul their flush the Chicago Tribune down the toilet. So it's actually a big problem. And in the course of planning this thing over the years, it was a very controversial issue. And we were really fought hard as the Friends of the Trail organization to say like the park district needs to put some bathrooms. And ultimately like we got the trail, but not the bathrooms. That was the deal. So this building says, well, we're going to have two public restrooms and they're going to be staffed and we're going to keep them clean and they're going to be right there on the trail and we'll have like some storage space for the organization and all these benefits and stuff. And in exchange, we just want basically a gate that connects our building to the trail so people from the trail can come in and use the bathrooms.
I missed a little bit. Is it a residential building? Or
yeah, it's like a condo building with high efficiency.
Oh, I get
units.
It. So now that gives them, I'm sorry, now I understand. So that gives them the opportunity to say, hey, we're near the 660 or whatever.
We call it the Bloomingdale Trail. It's not that they're near it. It's that their building has a little bridge that goes over the street that connects to the trail. So you can, if you live there, you can take your bike.
It's a unique feature of that building.
Correct. It's the only building in Chicago that connects to this thing. And as you can imagine, in our sort of Parks and Rec style, you know, meeting with the community last night, like this was a very heated topic.
Man, mayonnaise.
Yeah, what was the guy's like? What was he like? I lost my bird. He's gonna fly away.
There's no time. Yeah. I made sun tea with the water.
Yeah. So
sorry. Okay. So
basically, in our Parks and Rec style meeting last night, like I actually didn't do anything to embarrass myself. I didn't say anything at all because I have to choose what hill I'm gonna die on in these situations. But I don't know. To me, it's like. I mean, I'm actually curious where you guys come down on this. So let's take it for granted that this condo is going to be bad for the neighborhood. Oh, mm-hmm. Here's the other funny thing is there's going to be like 100 units and like 8 parking spots.
Mm-hmm. Oh God!
Like mm-hmm. you know, yeah, that's a big thing in Chicago now is they do these huge buildings with no parking, and it creates like infrastructure problems in the neighborhood because everyone.
I certainly couldn't foresee any problems from that.
Yeah. But anyway, so let's just take it for granted that the building, I think we can all agree this building's like bad for the neighborhood. Like the neighborhood would be way better off without this huge condo building, right? Like we all, I mean, that's just like, this is just,
but
we can just take that for red. No, we could say that.
No,
sure.
I can say that this is a terrible building.
Yeah, like lots of yeah, everyone, I think everyone in the meeting last night agreed that this building sucked and we wish that it wasn't being built. And also it's 6 stories tall and that would be like by far the tallest building in the neighborhood. So
the trade-off is, you agree for these folks will pay for much needed restroom facilities in return for a ramp that goes into their building and sort of a tacit thumbs up from the public sector that they're good citizens. Sort
yeah,
of.
Well, they really want their little gate that connects to the trail, and I think so where we came down as a board is we were unable to make a decision. I don't think we were able to make a decision because we debated for so long. Half the room was saying we've spent years trying to get a public bathroom and this is the bathroom and I want to explain the debate to you without revealing too much of my bias, but like some people are, you know, like, and then the other, so one, half the people are saying this building's going to destroy the neighborhood and I live here and it's going to decrease my quality of life and it's going to ruin the view of all these people in the neighborhood and we are opposed to this building in every way and it absolutely has to be stopped. And the other half of the room were like, yeah, but the building's going to get built anyway and we can either have the bathrooms or not.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
do you guys?
I see. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's the thing is, from what I understand about this building, it's already going to be built. Like this is not. In
Have
the
you
hands
ever
of,
known a building in Chicago that didn't get built? Like that. You
well,
know what
the
I mean?
Spy.
Like.
I mean, no,
but that's because
exactly.
they went bankrupt. Yeah, I mean, you know
but,
what I mean?
But like, this one is like far in development. There's no like they have all of their permits and bullshit. So this building is happening, and I can't imagine. I would say like take
but
the
also
bathrooms.
Like, if the trail organization says we oppose in the strongest terms everything having to do with this building and we're not going to budge an inch and we oppose everything, they're still going to build the building and it just won't have the gate that connects to the trail and it won't have bathrooms.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a fairly classic sort of, public sector trade-off where you're like, if it's going to happen anyway, I might as well get something out of it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that it's like a deal with the devil or like a sellout factor. There's something unsavory about it, but also like, are we not going to get the bath? Like we're going to say no to bathrooms.
Well, and that's the thing. I feel like you could have the leverage of being like, we hate you so much, but we're going to do this and you need to make it like, so brown and black people are not afraid to come and use your bathrooms.
We actually, it's interesting. We did talk about that and we said they need to have, there's like a contract with the city basically to connect to the trail. And we were like, you're going to have to like put an inclusivity clause in there saying that there won't be any discrimination. To me though, like I was just thinking like as we were going through this meeting, you know, there's, I don't know, 20 some people. We're in the theater in the office and, you know, it's just, it was talked for an hour about it back and forth. Someone was like, what about the bathrooms? And someone else was like, what about the view? And someone was like,
But it's happening, right?
And someone else was like, what about the bathrooms? And someone else was like, but it's six stories tall. And someone else was like, but what about the bathrooms? And so, and then someone else would be like, but we hate the development or whatever. You know, it was, so it was back and forth, back and forth. And no one, not me or the leader of the organization, the chairperson of the organization, no one was able to say, because of the dynamics of our organization, the kind of people we want to be, no one was able to swing a gavel and be like, okay, everyone, stop talking. We're doing this now.
Right.
And not even, even if we decided, okay, we're going to war against this building and we're going to fucking, we're going to fucking strap C4 to ourselves and sacrifice
training
ourselves
montage.
For the cause. Like, you know what I mean?
A knife to your boot.
Like, even if we said, this is it. We, like, even if we said, this is the hill we're dying on and we're going to war and we're going to do everything in our power and we're dedicating our lives from this moment forward to stopping this building, even then, we don't sort of lack the cohesion and the structure and the decision-making power to, like, effectively, like, to, like, really organize and put pressure on these people. And I was sitting in this meeting and I was thinking, like, man, isn't that like the asymmetry of like society? Like, it's so unfair that they're on their side, they have millions of dollars and there's a CEO who's probably kind of a half-wit, but he of this development company or contractor, I don't know, whoever's in charge, right? But that guy has the benefit of being able to give orders to an army and they have to do what he says because he controls like the purse strings and there's like a clear chain of command. And then meanwhile, we're right. Like, there's no question that we're the we're right and we're the better organization, but we're so hamstrung by our process, we can't even decide if we want the bathrooms or not. We can't, like, right. We don't even have the process to have the vote to make the decision to decide what to do next. And so we'll never, even whatever we decide, we'll never, like, fully, like tool up and, like, go to war against these people in like, an organized way, because that's the asymmetry of, like, we're the side that cares about process and, oh, I want to just make sure that you feel heard and I respect your viewpoint and let's hear some more about that.
And
how
just
does that
imagine
make you
how
feel?
Ungrateful you'd look.
Right.
As someone who has the privilege of getting off of the Bloomingdale Trail and going to stopping at our office to use the restroom and then getting back on, I don't like in okay, in theoretically, let's say the building just doesn't get built and it's like, oh, you know what, Bloomingdale Trail, friends of the Bloomingdale Trail, we've grown, our heart has grown 5 times its original size, and we're not going to build this building. 5 years later,
like Andrew Breitbart,
be...
you die on the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we lost a lot of good ones that way. Andrew Breitbart, yeah. Elvis, my grandfather. All the good ones go that way.
This area of Chicago is being gentrified, and those people who don't want the bathrooms weren't there fighting to not gentrify the neighborhood. So it not only feels disingenuous, but it's like up on a high horse of like, I can't afford to be in these buildings. Well, I guess I don't know. It feels dumb. I don't know. Should I have a strong opinion about this?
I have a strong opinion about it, which is I think this is the dirty work of politics, which is, on the one level, could we take over the city government and pass ordinances that prevent these kind of developments? Absolutely. I hope to. That happens in my life. Like, I work on that.
But you're
kind
at a different level in the stack.
Yes.
That's not the
right.
level of the stack that you're at. You're at the level
exactly.
of there's a little bit of, you know, noblesse oblige from an apartment that's going to let you have a bathroom that sounds otherwise impossible for reasons I don't totally understand. But, like, there's just no other option for bathrooms.
Well, because who's going to do the who's going to clean it?
Right.
I'm seriously like that. It's like, it sounds easy. It sounds easy until you go like, well, is that a full-time job or a part-time job? And does that person get benefits and who administers their benefits? Is there an HR department? Like, what happens when they quit?
Not to make it about me, but shit dog, this is the San Francisco problem in a lot of ways. They've tried to do this in the past, try to deal with this by like the sweeping under the rug version of this was, well, people just go to Starbucks and Starbucks and whoever was for understandable reasons, not really into people like basically approximating a shower in their bathroom. Understandably, like, and it's got real bad. And so I don't know, 20 years ago, they introduced this French company introduced these Fred Flintstone looking bathrooms that you could put ads on. And it was a complete fucking mess. They have them deployed around the city. I mean, like maybe on 4 occasions, tourists have gone into them and been like, I'm so unhappy that I came into here. They drop in this bathroom. Like I say, it's very Fred Flintstone inside because basically every time you use it, I think it costs a quarter or something, whatever. But every time you use it, it cleans the entire bathroom, sprays water everywhere. But basically people were using it to shoot up, get a beach and take a shower and just ruining these things completely every time. And they became exactly what you described. Nobody seems to account for the maintenance. And another, we went through this at my kid's school where somebody went to buy a 3D printer. And I was like, okay, what's the budget for supplies and repair? And they're like, well, we just want to get a 3D printer. I'm like, it's the Polaroid model, man. You're going to be, you buy this thing for cheap and then you're going to be paying for it in maintenance for the rest of your life. I'm sorry, I got off track, but it seems like a relatively small problem. Like where is a tourist going to pee? Suddenly it turns into, guess what? This has affected the quality of life of 800,000 people because there aren't bathrooms.
Yeah, no, I guess when I was saying like, I do feel strongly about it. It's like, I wish people had this much. It's just like this is the tiniest issue, right? It's like a municipal issue of like, how do people take a shit on this cool trail that got built? And like, mm-hmm. now magnify that 10 times, you know, whatever, up 10 million times or whatever of like this, this microcosm playing out and a million different issues and a million different municipalities and states and federal issues. And it's like, it's hard. It's really, really hard. And it's like very thankless work to be the guy on the committee who's like, well, I need everyone to feel heard and we have to reach a consensus and I don't want to bully anyone, but we have to make a decision. You know, it's hard. It's fucking hard.
Yeah, and yeah. People either should have been, they should have been invited or attended a much earlier, very different meeting in a different part of town. This is not the meeting where we get to adjudicate whether an apartment building is a good idea. There's nothing, we don't have any power over that.
And can't you take it, you even said, like, there's going to be an inclusivity clause, and isn't there, like, some sort of contract, like, okay, you need to have these bathrooms open for, like, 10 years or whatever? Because I'm sure that they are not going to, like, do they know how they're just going to be completely destroyed? Not by, like, bad actors or whatever, but, like, Starbucks can't keep their bathrooms clean. And I don't know, get the bathrooms.
That's how I feel. That's how I feel. It's like,
should we try to crowdfund this?
Oh, Jesus.
Go fund me.
No, I'm asking. I'm just asking. I'm literally asking the question. I'll put up a grant. Like, do you want to try and get bathrooms built publicly, or is it just too much of a pain?
Well, I'm just even going through.
Out of scope. It's out of scope.
I'm just even going through, like, well, here, let me open Solver.
I just Googled cost of maintaining a public restroom, so that's in my history.
All right. So how much do you think construction for the bathrooms would be? Should we say
we're talking about maybe 2 to 4 unisex one door bathrooms?
Yeah, let's say that we use some space.
$300,000.
I don't think it will be that much. I'm going to say I want to be generous here. So let's say we could do it. Let's say
you
we get
be
lots
surprised.
Of stuff.
How do you get the land?
Well, we own the land. We have the land. So the city has the land. So let's say we could build the bathrooms for $50,000. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming we get like all the plumbing fixtures donated because it's like a cool cause and stuff, right? Yeah. So that's just like labor and installation and whatever. So $50,000. Now you got to hire, let's just say we're going to hire one guy who maintains the bathroom. Like basically
somebody comes at 7 p.m. every night to make sure everything's reloaded. And
oh
not gross.
Boy, you think he could only come once a day?
No.
Well,
no.
You do like the parks. You could do like the parks and you put 6 rolls up at a time.
I don't know about that, man. You think
you need somebody more like come in 4 times a day?
I think you have a guy in a golf cart who's driving to the different spots with bathrooms almost on a loop throughout the day, checking on them. But let's just say this guy, what
I'm
do you think this guy's
sad. Never mind.
What do you think this guy's making?
$15 an hour.
Oh, well, so he's hourly, not salaried?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just guesstimating.
Sure. So $15 an hour.
I'm just trying to get in the ballpark.
Yep. $15 an hour.
Yeah, we can't afford it. You're right. We can't afford it.
Times 40 hours a week times 52 weeks in the year. Let's say he's hourly, he's only working 50 weeks a year.
Could you get a honey bucket?
Okay. Now, this guy, if he's working 40 hours a week, is he getting benefits?
Yeah, we should give him benefits.
Okay. So what's healthcare is going to be?
$3,000 a month.
Yeah. So let's say three.
That's what a honey bucket would cost.
So 3,000 times 12 months. And now how many years do we want to commit to funding this in our Kickstarter?
Oh, 5.
Okay, so that whole total is
honey bucket.
Well, in Cards has actually not bought honey buckets, but rented a similar thing for the Science March in Chicago.
I think we've created a very low cost package here of we're building all these bathrooms for $50,000. Mm-hmm. We're only hiring one guy to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And he's only getting paid $15 an hour. So our Kickstarter to keep these bathrooms running for 5 years would be $600,000.
That's a lot of money.
That's actually way less than I would have thought.
Who is going to give six? No.
I know that it is not going to be it would not be a successful Kickstarter. It just seems less than I would have thought. But also I still think that's very low for that doesn't include repairs or anything.
Yeah.
So
I mean it's gotta be
like at least $1 million a year, I feel like.
I think we're forgetting things like we don't have cost of supply. We don't have toilet paper in here.
Supplies,
we don't have like cleaning
repairs.
Supplies.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Maybe I could cheer you guys up by going to the Honey Bucket official shop.
No, okay. So we, I
did you see the image, Alex? Someone owns the brand, yes. Honey Bucket.
Yep. Oh no, Honey Bucket. That's our go-to local porta potties. So
I like
you just
Royal
saw
Purple.
Alex's vision of hell is 30 portalets lined up in a row, and on front of it says official shop. Now you go in, you get a Honey Bucket hand sanitizer.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! I want these T-shirts.
No,
I know.
Oh my god!
I want the hand
sanitizer.
We're
all getting Honey Bucket T-shirts. I'm getting them for all of us.
Oh god. Toilet Tunes, Road Warrior.
God,
aren't these awesome?
And only if they're triple ply.
We need a Honey Bucket.
Oh my god! I am holy shit!
Thing is, when you go into the Honey Bucket, it's a great.
Merlin, what are you a men's? What are you
now?
A men's medium? Men's large?
Oh,
yeah,
he's
I'm
a
large.
Small. Oh, really? Oh, you're tall.
And
yeah.
Alex, what are you?
Men's large.
I'm almost 5'9".
I'm a large man.
I'm getting us all
man.
Official Honey Bucket
large
logo. Look at this. I'm getting us all official Honey Bucket logo
Honey
T-shirts.
Bucket, Honey Bucket.
I'm going to wear this T-shirt.
They got hats.
I'm going to wear this T-shirt.
Oh, they got a bear. Look at the little bear. They have a teddy bear. They have a little toilet. A toilet mug.
I am wearing this
my
T-shirt
gosh.
All
you
the time.
You need this, Alex. You
oh,
love coffee.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah, indeed.
Wait, look at the Honey Bucket mug. You drink out of a little toilet. The beauty part is that's not what the toilets look like. The toilets are a hole into which one shits. It's not an actual bowl like this. I want a Honey Bucket coffee cup.
They sell Honey Bucket shoelaces. You know how whenever you leave a porta potty,
you
look down at your
shoelaces
and you're like, boy, I'm happy that those went in there.
I'm done with that. Honey Bucket.
Oh, I cannot tell you how much an official Honey Bucket logo T-shirt is in my wheelhouse of T-shirts.
Oh my god!
I just love saying Honey Bucket.
This is the
who
most...
you work for? Oh, I work over at Honey Bucket. Honey Bucket, god. Is that like a diner? Well. Okay, challenge. We're running real long here.
Oh, we yeah. are.
Add to cart. Oh man, I want this. Do I want it? Do I?
What
want
are you
it?
Getting? What
no,
are you? What's
no,
in your cart?
Leave it. I'm gonna close it. Leave it.
What's in your?
I just put a toilet in my bastic.
Oh, the toilet mug.
Oh, hello. You have
a
dildo in your bastic.
Oh, good.
Hello. Okay, I got us all
it's
honey
me.
An official
it's
Honey Bucket
me,
logo
the honey
T-shirt.
Bucket troll. No, down here.
Wow, Honey Bucket troll, you've had a real mm-hmm. fall from grace from your days in the public mm-hmm. library, and then that other bit from last week.
Oh, I just like to help people. Remember, they've got a toilet in their bastic.
Honey Bucket. Say it soft, and it's almost like praying. Challenge.
All right, Merlin, it was your challenge this week.
Digga, digga, digga. I'm tired. Digga, digga, digga. Long time ago, we put ourselves to the task of just kind of making a whole bunch of ideas for different challenges. We have an Excel spreadsheet, a Google spreadsheet that Max does not currently look at. But a long time ago, there was an article that Max wanted everybody... Oh, we didn't even talk about Gorilla Dream. Damn it. Mm. I'll save it for the after show. A long time ago, Max suggested we all read an article by something called Slate Star Codex, The Joyful Reduction of Uncertainty. It is an essay from Ho Campers, September 30th, 2014, mm-hmm. written by Scott Alexander. And the title of the article is I Can Tolerate Anything Except the Outgroup, that was assigned reading for this week. And that's our main topic this week.
Well, I have been aware of this article for a couple of years, and it might be my favorite, like, piece of internet writing. Like, I just think about it all the time. I think it's really smart. I don't know.
It's
because I thought I'd have more to say about it in the moment.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. We can keep it short. I think something has ruined my attention span, and I had a lot of trouble following this as I read it in Instapaper. Huh. But I like the way it ends a lot. I am curious about what your takeaway is. Maybe one way to approach this, unless Alex, you have a different idea. One way to approach this is let's give an overview of what the article says and the nut of his kind of model that he's providing here. Would that be useful?
Yeah. So I think the main like thought technology in this article that was really helpful for me is that he talks about the America in terms of having a red tribe and a blue tribe. And then he also talks about a gray tribe, which I think has absolutely come to fruition. So he writes, this is Scott Alexander who writes this blog, writes, the red tribe is most classically typified by conservative political beliefs, strong evangelical and religious beliefs, creationism, opposing gay marriage, owning guns, eating steak, drinking Coca-Cola, driving SUVs, watching lots of TV, enjoying American football, getting conspicuously upset about terrorists and commies, marrying early, divorcing early, shouting USA is number one, and listening to country music. The blue tribe is most classically typified by liberal political beliefs, vague agnosticism, supporting gay rights, thinking guns are barbaric, eating arugula, got me, drinking fancy bottled water, driving Priuses, reading lots of books, being highly educated, mocking American football, feeling vaguely like they should like soccer but never really being able to get into it, getting conspicuously upset about sexists and bigots, marrying later, constantly pointing out how much more civilized European countries are than America, and listening to, quote, everything except country. There's also a partially formed attempt to spin off a gray tribe typified by libertarian political beliefs, Dawkins-style atheism, vague annoyance that the question of gay rights even comes up, eating paleo, drinking Soylent, calling in rides on Uber, reading lots of blogs, calling American football sports ball, getting conspicuously upset about the war on drugs and the NSA, listening to Filk. What is Filk?
Mm-mm, I don't know.
But for our current purposes, this is a distraction and they can safely be considered part of the blue tribe most of the time. That's one of the most interesting parts of the whole essay to me. And that's the one of the parts that's just, I don't know, just sort of an interesting way to align your thinking around American political spectrums. And what's interesting to me is when he wrote this in 2014, gray tribe was like just a subset of blue tribe. Like they were just the weirdo techie kind of folks in blue
tribe.
Had
the Tea Party happened at that point?
Yes, this was post-Tea Party. But since this essay has been written, I think it's fairly clear that gray tribe has spun over to red tribe, at least in the Trump election, right? Like the whole internet kind of crowd and the internet, that sort of internet, you know, trolls and that whole sort of tech bro culture, they all became
Silicon Valley kind of like
Trump
people, know, woke bros.
Yeah, they all became like Trump people. Now I think maybe it's more fractured, but I would say by and large they're probably Trump voters. So gray tribe is sort of interesting. There may be like a bellwether kind of a thing for like the mood of the country or whatever, like whichever side they're kind of leaning towards.
I also, I've heard that phrase in-group and out-group used before. I'd never really given it much thought. Alex cut out the silence while I look for where he describes this. If I had to, so at one point here, it's in lots of sections. Section two, if I had to define tolerance, it would be something like respect and kindness toward members of an out-group. And so describing here, we have a lot of people, let's see, he's basically saying an out-group represents the people. How would you describe it, Max, as the people who are not in your group? That's the other side. It's the
other.
Yeah,
it's others.
Tribe.
Like it's always, I think it's always, it's more or less always part of a group identity to have someone that you're not. Like, it's very hard to be part of a group and then not have like some external reference of, oh, well, we're defined by
the
partially
others.
Not being them. Yeah.
Yeah, but the others. But
they
then
took
you pivots,
my boy.
They pivots to something real good here.
Walt.
Was that Interstellar?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. I don't want to read this paragraph.
Wait, no, that
was
Lost. Lost? Yeah.
Oh,
it was a mix.
We got a man on your boat.
Yeah.
We got a man on your boat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we used to say when my daughter made a dookie in her diaper. Said, oh, no, we got a man on the boat.
Oh, God.
I want to avoid a very easy trap, which is saying that outgroups are about how different you are or how hostile you are. I don't think that's quite right. And then he goes into a probably slightly unnecessary explanation of compare the Nazis to the German Jews and the Japanese. And he's basically saying, like, even though the Nazis and the Jews actually had more in common in a lot of ways. Let's see. Meanwhile, the conflict between the Nazis and the German Jews, some of whom didn't even realize they were anything other than German until they checked their grandparents' birth certificate, is the stuff of history and nightmares. Any theory of outgroupishness that naively assumes the Nazis' natural outgroup is Japanese or Chinese people will be totally inadequate. And now you know this one's got me popping a nut. This isn't a weird exception. Freud spoke of the narcissism of small differences. I say narcissism, minor differences. And this is one of the greatest thought technologies of all time. Saying that, quote, it is precisely communities with adjoining territories and related to each other in other ways as well who are engaged in constant feuds and ridiculing each other. So, you know, in this instance, I think you could think of it, if we were being unkind, we talk about how, like, see, I don't even know the names of current groups, but like it's like you don't hate people outside of your musical interest. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like more like the closer somebody gets to being exactly like you, the more distinctions that you find and the more reasons you find to really hate them. So he's taking a little twist and a turn and saying, in this case, if I consider myself like a real woke liberal or progressive, is the outgroup in this case really the Republican Party, or is it people in my tribe that I have disagreements with? Isn't that part of the nut?
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, nobody's going to read this whole thing, so we're going to have to describe it to them.
Well,
it's not like a hard read.
I thought it was a fun read. Yeah, yeah. I think he's a great writer.
I love the ending. I love
one
how
thing
it ends
that's
up.
Still it's not a huge part of the whole thing, but he says that the most controversial thing he's ever written was just about when Osama bin Laden died, which I. Like, so I was 10 when 9/11 happened, and I was a freshman in college when he died, I guess. And I remember, like, hearing about it in a cab, like, over the radio, and having this overwhelming feeling of, like, relief. And then having an overwhelming feeling of guilt. And I'm like, why? Like, this is not part of... I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. But some of the comments of like, oh, you're a monster. How could you care about someone? Like, how could you not?
Yeah, like, that's not very Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah, it just felt so weird. I don't know. There were some things that I didn't quite agree. Like, those people are like, they're part of what we would call like call out culture now. It's kind of... not representative of the blue tribe as a whole, I think.
But I think he makes sort of like you're saying here. I think he's sort of making a case. If I read this right, I read this quickly. but that he's making sort of a case to say that you are signaling with saying something like, you know, actually, I'm kind of relieved that chapter's over with. You mm-hmm. are signaling something that you feel you are sending a signal of support to the other tribe by
right.
saying that.
Yeah. And correct. It's like, I'm a monster for, like, having this gut reaction of relief that, like, the boogeyman from my childhood is, like...
out of the picture.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay, we're done with this now.
Because you could, yeah, another way to do this, I hate to split hairs, but, like, another way to say this is, like, you know, are you somebody who's watching the Saddam Hussein... was it? No, it was Gaddafi. You ever seen the video of Gaddafi?
No, I couldn't.
It's rough. Yeah. It's real rough. You saw parts of it in Hypernormalization.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be on the one hand, the kind of person who's glad to see him, like, raped and killed on the streets mm-hmm. versus somebody who's like, wow, I'm kind of glad the specter of that is no longer hanging over our head. And you could choose to look at that from two different angles. Are you glorifying the death of somebody who's just like just another Muslim guy? Or are you like in a more long history way going like, well, I guess that piece is over for now. Am I being too clever there? Is that not?
No, isn't it also a little weird about bin Laden? Like, I always thought it was a little bit weird that like isn't the whole thing about bin Laden that he like had no respect for like natural law and like human lives and like rule of law and civilization and all these values that we care about. Like, why did we like murder him? Why didn't he have a trial? Why didn't he go to The Hague or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know why he didn't go to The Hague, because he would have died in a jail cell and they would have never gotten their shit together. I mean, I know why it's like convenient for the U.S. to just be like,
we lost some really good Nazis that way. No, at Nuremberg.
I know you're joking, but yeah, I
I'm
mean,
not
you're
joking.
Not,
that's,
exactly.
That's what happened.
No,
yeah,
you're, yeah, like, yeah. It's true.
Basically, so bribed one of the guards to give him cyanide.
Yeah.
He died before we could hang him.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you see what I'm saying, though? Like, I always thought it was it's just one of those little nagging doubts in the back of my mind of like, was that the best thing that we just murdered him and like dumped his body in the ocean? Like,
no,
that,
I
isn't
totally
that not
agree.
The, isn't that not the how it's supposed to like? Am I wrong?
I don't know. I think things have really changed, you guys. Civility has gone away, and we got to really fight for our side, you guys. We may have to use some of the maneuvers of the other side to win this.
All right, Dig Dug.
We're doing this again.
Punch some Nazis.
Dig Dug. One of the things that I thought it was like reverse bearing the lead. Like he kind of busted his nut out early with in part one. he said, there's a lot of people who say, I forgive you, when they mean no harm done. And a lot of people who say that was unforgivable when they mean that was genuinely
that
really
was
bad.
Good.
Whether
yes.
or not forgiveness is right is a complicated topic that I don't want to get into, blah, blah, blah. Since forgiveness is generally considered a virtue and one that many credit for having, I think it's fair to say you only earn the right to call yourself forgiving if you forgive things that genuinely hurt you. And that started,
That's pretty, you disagree?
No. I totally agree. And I wonder.
It sure makes you see a lot of your own things you've patted yourself on the back about in a different light.
I mean, I definitely, again, so many of the stuff I, in terms of philosophy and politics, I come at it from like, I just can't help but come at it from like a Catholic brain. And wondering if like what he refers to as the red tribe has become, or rather, I don't know. So is the gray tribe, like, would you still consider that like libertarians and like the base? Or
I think it's a cultural it's like a cultural group. It's like Reddit.
So
Reddit is gray tribe.
Okay. So yeah. Then what's the tribe of like the lazy white women who voted for No. Well, yes. the women who voted for Trump, like brown
red tribe.
I guess so. Well, then is the red tribe more forgiving of things than the blue tribe?
No.
Like
they think so.
I know. I'm just wondering and thinking like what
the blue tribe's not forgiving at all.
Right. That's what I mean.
We crucify people all the time.
Whereas
for sport. And the red tribe points it out all the time. And kind of have a point a lot of the time.
And that's what I just think about so many folks that I know who would be like, he says he doesn't interact with people who are part of the red tribe at all. And I think if I had grown up in a different place, I'd be the exact same way. But the
wasn't that story about the Reddit thread of someone was like, can someone explain the case against gay marriage? And nobody could explain it. But everyone else said, well, I believe in gay marriage, but here's what I think the arguments would be.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think of so many people whose minds have changed and they've like mushed over into this sort of purple area. And this isn't like about turning Trump voters into Democrats or whatever. It's just about people whose minds have evolved. And I don't know. It got me like the forgiveness paragraph really hit me in a weird way. I'm going to have some more candy.
And it's weirdly, it set me off thinking about something. I hate to make this about a Trump thing, but like it sent me off in another direction of thinking about something. You know, two threads that are happening as we record this is on the one hand, there's continued speculation about who the president may choose to pardon for various crimes. How many times will they get pardoned for what things? Is that going to happen? And at the same time, there's a lot going on right now with the idea of confidentiality agreements and NDAs. And in both cases, there's something that this story reminds me of. In both cases, when I try to play it out in my mind, how that would actually work, my brain breaks a little bit. In the case of pardons, in the past, there's a pardon board. You go before. Generally, historically, somebody who has been convicted of a crime and probably has served time for that crime in most cases will dozens of years later be before a board to say, you know, I want to be, you know, I want to be pardoned. I want the sentence reversed or whatever, right? Back when things were normal, that's what you would do. And there would be a whole thing. And then toward the end, like the day before they left, one of the presidents would pardon a bunch of people. Yes, sometimes it was overtly political. The thread through all of those, two threads through all of that was that it was somebody who usually had been convicted of a crime for which, you know, they had been shown to be guilty. And that that you were basically saying there's some quality of mercy here to this person who is guilty of a crime being let go, right? So what happens when our president instead starts pardoning people when there's not been a conviction yet, for example? Like, that's going to be super fucking weird. But then it also makes me think of shit like Omarosa. Like, what happens? What happens? I mean, you know, again, there's always further we can go. The other thing is, like, I feel like we already got a taste of this with the Stormy Daniels stuff, but it's going to be so interesting if and when Trump and his people decide to start trying to enforce all of these NDAs. Because for every step of this, you find yourself going, okay, then what happens? Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the similarities where you go, okay, hey, you know what? I'm going to take you into arbitration. Arbitration for what? You know what? No, tell me what are you bringing me to arbitration for? You know what? Oh, It's this secret NDA that you can't admit exists. Oh, okay, so you're saying I signed an NDA? No, I'm not saying that, but you're going to arbitration. Then what happens? We go further. You go into arbitration. Well, what happens if that gets kicked up in the court? Well, guess what? There's going to be discovery. Then what happens?
Well, I think the arbitration, I don't think that's how it works. I don't think arbitration gets like kicked up into court. I think arbitration is something that people agree to keep it out of court.
That's a good legal question. But when you go into arbitration with somebody like, who is it? Somebody's dad used to do this. John's dad, Roderick's dad. When you go into arbitration, is there a presumption of guilt where you don't have to adjudicate whether this thing was actually broken? Is it like just a fucking star chamber where you decide how many millions you owe? I mean, don't you have to kind of show what the case for this thing is, how it was breached?
Now because I've watched almost every episode of Netflix's The Staircase, I'm an expert in criminal law and litigation. But I'm thinking of that in terms of arbitration doesn't go to the courts, but Alfred plea. I how many people are going to get an Alfred plea out of this administration of like, oh yeah, I did it, but not really, and then they just skate away into the dark.
I'm not sure why I brought this up. It's just that in both cases, I guess maybe especially the pardon stuff, I think it's very interesting because the whole nature of a pardon historically has been that in some sense the person admitted they did something wrong, or the system decided that they did something wrong, and that the quality of grace and forgiveness in that case is like you come down to like a Sandy Hook parent. We're like, can you imagine how fucking hard it would be to like forgive at this point? But mm-hmm. That's what real forgiveness is.
Yep.
You know, and true tolerance in some ways is like this guy is saying, is not just putting up with stuff you find easy to tolerate. True tolerance is being able to put up with something that's basically, or to not even, I don't want to say love, but to learn to accept something that is antithetical to your basic nature. And in all these instances, I think we run up against this historical precedent of like, we're going to have to start asking ourselves more and more, well, like, what is it? What does it mean to forgive? Like, what does it mean to pardon? What does it mean to like, because at some level, somebody had, in order to get the forgiveness, you have to fucking admit you did something wrong. And there's not a lot of that going on right now. Well, you know, I think that's going to make a comeback. Sorry, that was a weird tangent, but do you see the point at all?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that's why I think about this essay. I'll just say, like, my pitch for people reading this essay, because it is really long, my pitch for people reading this is that I think that the discourse and people talking about politics is so dumb right now, right? Like, everything is someone tweeting like, if Trump said the N word, I'm not voting for him again. And then 20 people yelling at that person saying like,
right.
You're a bad person for voting him in the first place. And then that person saying again like, fake news. Just to rile people. Like,
it's the dumb,
like where, like to your point, Marlon, like where do we go from there, right? Like, I mean, I think it's fun. I think
it sounds like two sides belching at each other in slightly different pitches.
yeah. And now, is it funny? Is it? I'm having fun. I mean, I like a good belching contest as much as the next guy.
Sure,
but
you're not made of stone.
It is nice to. It's nice to remember that we actually can say smart things about politics and about society, and there actually is like insights and it's kind of exhilarating to read. You know, it's like something from like a bygone era where there was like thoughtfulness, and you could get a new thought technology in your head and be like, wow, I see this a little bit differently now. Well, that was a funny one. I think that's in the can.
Did you see this? Did you see this mug you can get? It looks like a toilet.
Shoelaces.
Honey bucket.
Wow, weak sauce, guys. Oh. Weak sauce.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, boy.